Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with Beans. We are I'm in for a treat today. You're about to hear an interview that I did with Attorney General of Louisiana, Liz Merle, who graciously gave us about 20 minutes of her time to talk about Missouri v. Biden, which if you've been listening to the podcast the past couple days, you know is being heard by the SCOTUS on Monday. So without further ado, let's get into this interview and we'll be back at the end to discuss it. And we've got a lot more stuff to talk about today on the show. Fannie Willis' decision on disqualifications coming. I've got a clip to play for you on that. And then some fun. We've got some fun. Off we go. In a second, Attorney General of Louisiana. I am so excited to be joined by the new, we'll talk about that in a second, Attorney General of Louisiana, Liz Merle. Liz, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Tracy. It's great to be with you.
Congratulations. I think I had a party when you were elected. So congratulations.
Thank you.
It was so great seeing that transition, you know, with Jeff Landry moving up to governor and you taking his old spot. It was great. It was like the voters know what they're doing and they've elected a real champion for them in Louisiana in you. So let's talk about the thing that everyone's talking about. Monday at the Supreme Court, they'll be hearing arguments in this temporary injunction appeal in the case of Missouri v. Biden. So tell me what your thoughts are about what to expect from the government going in there on Monday.
Well, you know, it's a good question. I think that the government's briefs telegraph that what they intend to do is try and claim that this is nothing more than government speech and that government needs to be able to speak to the people. But this is something very different than just government speaking and government trying to telegraph to the people what it believes to be correct or true or whatever. This is about a very clear enterprise by the government to censor our speech and to prevent us from hearing other people who are trying to speak to us as government officials.
You know, you're right. And something very interesting happened when they put, you know, they agreed to hear this. There was a 3 or 4 page dissent that was actually written. And one of the things that the justices said in that was basically what you just said. Does the government think that it's above Americans' First Amendment rights? There's nothing here that indicates that they can't speak to Americans at all. And
right.
they tried that in the Fifth, where you know, in the Fifth Circuit, which tell us how unprecedented it is, if at all, for the Fifth Circuit to reconsider a ruling and add something to it rather than take it away.
That is a great point. So that's exactly what I was going to say, is that it's really almost unheard of. You know, I think when it went back up for rehearing, both sides had kind of asked for the court to rehear. And instead of narrowing the injunction, the court actually added CISA back into the injunction. So I can't think of any other time when that's happened, quite frankly. And, you know, it was reassuring that the court really, really did look at that injunction very, very closely and evaluate whether it was improper or overly broad in restricting the government from carrying out essential government functions like protecting us from terrorism or protecting our national security interests. The court actually carved that out and said, you can still do those things. What you can't do is censor people's protected speech.
And there's an interesting argument in here about the right to listen as well. Do you want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, it was great that the Fifth Circuit recognized what the district court also recognized, and that is that there is a right to hear what our constituents have to say to us, and that is really an essential component of speech, as that it doesn't mean anything if you have the ability to speak, but no one can hear you because the federal government has blocked your voice. So, I mean, they have put themselves in as an intermediary to prevent us from being able to hear what our constituents care about and think. And that is, you know, very, very threatening to democracy as a whole, but to the ordinary operations, our day-to-day operations as government officials, to not be able to hear what our constituents think and want to say.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, John Sauer brought up that they had censored him talking about this very case on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And people had thought up until now that we were just all making it up. But how much information did you guys receive? And I'm going to say this, it's probably not everything. And one of the things that I get all the time is, well, they're just not going to listen. They're just not going to provide. Can you explain how getting discovery from the social media companies and the government at the same time kind of is a workaround to them holding back stuff?
Well, you know, we were fortunate in this case that Judge Doty allowed us to do some early discovery. And that's what really permitted us to get all the information as quickly as we did. It is still in a preliminary stage, so we don't have everything. And what we did get was alone. I mean, that was shocking. So it's over 20,000 pages. Some of those things are emails with White House officials threatening the people at Facebook if they don't take down certain posts, and how quickly they weren't acting quickly enough to take down those posts, and really very threatening type emails. And, you know, that stuff came straight out of the White House. So this is really just the tip of the iceberg, but we had 20,000 pages of it.
How do you work around the change in department heads? I think there were 60 switches right after the judge decided, you know, in our favor. I'm going to say our because I'm an American citizen. How do you work around that in a case like this? Just it takes longer. It's longer to get info. Do they pull that, or how does that work?
Well, they're constantly trying to block the information from being released. And that's just something we expect and prepare for in litigation. And, you know, I would expect they would continue to do that. It really doesn't matter that there was a change in officials. They all occupied the same official title or capacity. So they were carrying out the same function no matter what job they were in. We were disappointed that we didn't get to depose Jen Psaki. I think that was wrong. You know, the Fifth Circuit did engage a couple of times and block depositions we were trying to take of people who had left. And I think that you can still get documents related to those people's actions and communications that would continue to be part of this case as we move forward. You know, right now what we're doing is defending an injunction that is at the preliminary injunction stage, but it's at a very critical time because we have a presidential election coming up, and some of the speech that was being censored affected election speech.
Yeah, the Hunter Biden laptop, stuff about the 2020 election, all censored. On Jen Psaki, though, just to go back to that, I was going through the clips where she did threaten the social media companies, the disinformation dozen. She's reading from a binder. So how could they say there's no responsive documents if she's got a binder in front of her she's reading from?
Well, you would expect those documents to have been preserved. They should have been preserved. You know, whether they were or weren't would take probably more time for us to determine as we go through litigation. And at the stage we were in, we were still able to get a large number of documents that illustrated an extremely vast enterprise all the way through CISA and the FBI, which is why the Fifth Circuit added them back in.
So what happens now? Number one, when do you expect a decision? I know that's a crazy question. And number two, what happens if and when the court rules in favor of upholding that temporary injunction? What will happen at the government and elsewhere?
Well, you know, if it's upheld, all it's really doing now is telling the government not to do what it already isn't supposed to do. I mean, we proved they were violating the First Amendment. The injunction says, you know, all these agencies need to stop violating the First Amendment. So they never should have been doing it in the first place. And it tells them to stop doing something they shouldn't have done. I think that that's why it is a properly narrowed injunction, and it doesn't stop the government from doing what it legally can do. We are in an election year, and it's even more critical that people are allowed to speak and allowed to openly express their concerns, their criticisms, whatever their beliefs are about our existing government. So couldn't be at a more critical time. On the timing of the ruling, I think that, you know, usually the court is done with and issues all of these rulings by around the middle of June. This argument is taking place next week in the middle of March. So, you know, I mean, I would expect it to take a couple of months unless they, you know, remarkably all agree and issue something more quickly.
Where in the actual case that's ongoing, because this is something that confuses people all the time. They think that this is the actual case itself going in front of SCOTUS and not this portion of it. Where in progress-wise, sorry, where are we in Missouri v. Biden, the standalone case?
So it's a preliminary injunction. And what that means is that the judge has taken an initial look at what the government was doing and has determined that there is adequate factual information to show that what we alleged was true and that there is a proper legal basis for determining that we are likely to succeed on the merits. It's not a final ruling, but it is a preliminary ruling to tell them at this point, you need to stop doing what you shouldn't be doing. And so it returns the government back to what we call the status quo. It puts them back into a place where they are compliant with the law and with the Constitution. And so, you know, arguably that means they have to stop censoring everybody and pressuring these companies, these tech companies, to censor people's speech.
This is unbelievable to me that we're even having this conversation. It's insane. But the case is still ongoing, moving through the normal course of discovery, right? I mean, there's still production being done. And what's next steps? Do we need to wait on the SCOTUS to rule? No, right? The case is still moving.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting you ask that. I mean, what I have found in every case that we've litigated against the government is that everything really slows down once you get an injunction and it goes up on appeal, especially when it's pending at the United States Supreme Court, because everybody wants to see what the court has to say before they move forward. And in this case, you know, I think that unless the government says that the Supreme Court says that we have no authority to pursue these claims at all, then the case will go back and it will continue. And I'll tell you, Tracy, it really concerns me that the federal government's arguing that attorney generals don't have the authority to pursue these claims on behalf of our citizens. My oath of office was to enforce the federal constitution and the state constitution. And what you have is the government in a massive enterprise violating people's First Amendment rights. I think this is part of the oath of office I took to protect our people.
And the best thing about what you just said, in my mind, the eternal optimist, is you've made it through those standing arguments three times now.
Right.
Three times. So that's positive. It's not, you know, it's, I couldn't imagine after getting a dissent on a, you know, writ of certiorari that now all of a sudden the judges are all going to be like, the justices will be like, actually, no, they don't have grounds. That would be crazy, because that dissent was something. I read it. I threaded it out. We have some stalwarts over there at the court, thankfully. What are you trying to do to get ready for Monday? You just want to raise awareness about this, right? And let folks know to follow and pay attention.
I do. You know, so I really want people to pay attention, because I think it's an enormously important case that will certainly not only impact, you know, whether the government can interfere with our ability to communicate on these platforms, but also whether the attorney general, your attorney general, can protect your rights when you may not even know that they are being interfered with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's one of the threads that is running through this case, is that many, many people may have been censored. They may have been prevented from speaking or hearing what someone else was saying, and they may never know about it. You know, my son had myocarditis from the Pfizer vaccine, and I spoke often about it. I testified in the legislature. I sent letters to the governor and to the Department of Health because of information that I thought they were putting out that was not correct in terms of warning young adults and their parents what some of the risks of myocarditis are. And I really don't know. I know that the government was very clearly censoring people who had anything to say that might create vaccine hesitancy, even when it was true. Mm-hmm. So I have to assume that they were also preventing my own speech from being shared with other people, because it might have affected their decisions. And so we don't know how many people might have been censored. It'll probably be impossible for us to ever know. But I think it's really important that attorney generals who discover a vast enterprise like this being perpetuated by the federal government have the power to stop it.
Yeah, I have one last question for you along that same vein, and then I'll let you go. And thanks so much for the gift of your time today. My question is this: let's say everything goes the way I think and hope it will, and you guys end up winning this for every single American out there. What mechanism of accountability do we have, given that they did this in the first place? After the decision comes down, you know, they did this, what's the remedy? And then how do we hold government accountable moving forward?
You know, that's a great question. I think that that's one of the hardest questions in this case is accountability. How do you ensure accountability? I mean, I think it starts with an injunction that says stop violating people's First Amendment rights. That alone will be an enormous victory for all of us, for the American people, for the Constitution, and for the First Amendment. So, you know, let's start with that. There may be more to come. I think there are some private claims that have been brought by different people, and we'll see how those go and whether or not they can get some kind of money damages if they can prove that. But I think it starts with awareness and making sure that we would have an injunction in place that we can go and enforce if we find that that pressure is mounting. It will give the tech companies a safe harbor. Mm-hmm. You know, they were exposed. I mean, and if you look at the list of amicus briefs, they're long, that have been filed in this case. One thing that's notably absent is, and it's been absent from this case from the beginning, are the tech companies saying we did this on purpose on our own.
Yep.
They've never said that. And the reason they haven't said that is because they're trying to protect their own Section 230 immunity, which is exactly what the president was threatening when they were caving to that pressure. So they were put between a rock and a hard place. And I think that that this will also give them some ability to say, stop. You can't do that. Like, and they won't be as exposed to the threat of the government because there's an injunction that will also act to protect them.
Yeah, I mean, the Fifth Circuit even mentioned that the terms of service are forever tainted by the government of these companies forever. I mean, that was something stunning I read in the appeal in the decision there. Because I was like, wow, they really get it. They took time to understand what they were ruling on. And unfortunately, it didn't seem that SCOTUS really did that for the most part when they decided to stay the injunction for as long as they did. That was mind-blowing to me. Any last thoughts you have for folks before we let you go get ready for this big, huge thing on Monday?
Just tune in Monday. You know, speak out against the government censoring your speech. I mean, one of the most prized rights that we have is the First Amendment right, and that right encompasses our ability to criticize the government. And what they were doing was trying to block criticism of the government. And, you know, I work in government, I am a government official, and I understand that part of the job is allowing people to criticize my work. And so that's just, if you don't want to be criticized in your role in public office, then you probably shouldn't be in it. But I think that the president of the United States and the officers of the United States that are trusted with so much power, we ought to be able to trust that they will not openly violate the First Amendment.
Awesome. I am so grateful for you taking time to talk to everybody today. I'll be streaming the hearing on Monday. So I'm excited to show everybody what's going on, and everyone should pay attention. Thank you so much for fighting so hard for us. We really appreciate this.
Well, thank you. It's a great privilege to me to be able to do it. And I'll be inside, and it'll be kind of fun when I get outside and see what everybody was saying.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of things to say, I'm sure. Have a great one.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks. And there we are. The amazing Attorney General from Louisiana, Liz Merle. Just a great, great champion for her citizens. I'm so glad she won. I was a little bit worried that she went to a runoff, and I was like, please, Louisiana, do the right thing. And they did. They elected Jeff Landry as governor, and they elected Liz Merle as attorney general. So off we go into the sunset for Monday, where I will stream live for you here on Rumble, on X, on Getter, the Supreme Court hearing on the temporary injunction in the most important civil liberties case in our lifetimes, Missouri v. Biden. Real quick, before we move on to the rest of the nonsense going on in the world today, we have thank yous to send out. Thank you to Real Mike's wife, and also to the amazing Reese for their live chat donations. They are so helpful to us. I got a couple of emails from people since Wednesday's show that made me smile. I wanted to thank you guys. They told me I should be asking at the beginning and the end of every show for donations to Uncover DC. So to appease, and even though it makes me feel uncomfortable, I will say, if you want to support the journalism we're doing at Uncover DC, if you want to continue to get interviews like this and information like we bring you on this show, please go to uncoverdc.com/support and consider sending us a coffee. It's so helpful. It really does help us quite a bit for reasons that you probably understand. So God bless everybody who took the time to do that the other day. And it's much appreciated, like from right here. And I really mean that. Today, we also have the decision in the disqualification of Bonnie Willis. And this is something that I put up on social media last week and haven't been able to share with you yet. And I want to share it with you. It's a clip from Ashley Merchant, who's an attorney who brought this whole disqualification thing to the forefront. She is actually not a Republican. She is not a Trump supporter. She's just a person who cannot stand government corruption, no matter who's perpetrating it. God bless her. We need more like this in the world, truthfully. She's putting her entire career basically on the line for this, given what she's doing. This is her explaining. Now, I had always assumed that the reason why they found out about what Fannie Willis was doing with Nathan Wade was because his ex-wife got wind of it and was like, hey, guys, you need to take a look here. No. This clip I'm about to play for you will explain it all in case you missed it. She is in a hearing in front of the Georgia Senate Judiciary Committee, or a special committee that was called to explore what is going on here from a congressional standpoint. So I'm going to play this for you so that you guys can hear this. It's going to stun you. It stunned me. I was just blown away, and it's perfect timing because in about 5 minutes, we'll probably get the docket on the case. And if I can grab that for you live as we broadcast here, I sure will. Here we go. Listen to this.
When did she become DA?
She became DA in, it would have been January 2021.
Okay.
So she became DA January 1st, 2021, but she had a transition team leading up to that. So, and Mr. Wade was in charge of her transition team. So Mr. Bradley told me all of that. We met for about an hour. Said that they had been together. They met at this conference. Nathan was still married. Mr. Bradley was upset because of what happened in the divorce. He was upset because they were still married, you know, the Wades were still married, and he essentially just left her after meeting Miss Willis and dropping the kids off at college. So,
and Bradley was Wade's attorney in that divorce action you're talking about?
Okay. Yes, I didn't know that at the time.
But they were law partners.
They had been, okay. Yes. Okay. And I actually don't know if he was still his attorney when he talked to me. I don't know if he was or not.
All right.
Because at some point, Mr. Wade represented himself, and then he hired a different lawyer. So I didn't know anything about the divorce at that time.
So Bradley did not like the way Wade had treated his wife.
He did not.
But he represented him.
He did not like the way he had treated his wife. He didn't like what was happening in the divorce proceeding, yes.
Okay.
And, I mean, I remember specifically him saying, you know, I handle my business, things like that. Like, you know, that I don't leave my wife without alimony. Because this, and we talked about it. I mean, Miss Wade had been a stay-at-home mom for, you know, they'd been married almost 30 years. And literally it was right after they dropped their youngest off at college that he said, move out, you know. And so we went through, you know, I was obviously interested in, wait, what? What's happening? Walk me through this. And so he was telling me about the access cards, you know, that Mr. Wade had access cards, telling me about the contracts, told me about their contract, that they had that Nathan had brought them the contract for the first appearance hearings. They had a contract for that. We didn't talk about that yet. That they had the contract for the taint work, and then ultimately that Nathan was hired as the attorney on this case. That they had been dating before, and he told me, you know, they met at hotels. He would go to her place, and I remember him saying, you need to find her her bestie who they had a falling out. That's the person whose condo it was that they would meet at.
Did you later determine who that bestie was?
Yes, it was Robin Yerdy. It was not until sometime later that I determined that. It was very difficult to determine who that was because he did not remember her name.
But he knew her by sight?
He did.
Did he later confirm to you or identify who she was?
Yes. So I had sent him showed him a couple pictures of some other folks or
this
names.
This was in January of 24, right yes. before your motion?
It okay. was. It may have even been after I filed the motion. It was around the time. It was either before or around the time, but it was in January. I had gotten some open records requests from the DA's office. They had a contract.
We just put on screen some of the text messages that you produced to us.
Yes.
This is from your phone.
It is.
And you're talking to Terrence Bradley, I see over there on the left.
Yes. And so when you see on the 14th, that one that's right in the middle that says file attachment with MIME type, that is a picture of her. So it doesn't show up on this, but it's actually, there was a picture
of her. So while you're texting, you're shooting him a picture to see if he can identify Robin Yearty?
Yes, yes.
Did he identify her?
He did, yes. He said, yes, that's her, that's the East Point. And he thought the apartment was in East Point. I later found out it was in Hapeville, but those are very close in you know, close areas.
So he knew they would meet at that apartment?
He did, yes. He knew all about it. And it was hard to find Miss Yearty. What happened, and she was Robin Bryant, and then she got married and was Yearty. I did an open records request for a contract that the DA's office got. It's called Critical Mention. She has a, I guess he's like, he's an attorney, but he's sort of in charge of communications. His name is Jeff DeSantis. He, right after Ms. Willis had opened the investigation in this case, that same week, he contracted a company called Critical Mention, which is a media monitoring company. They put a dollar figure, basically, on your media presence, and they give you these analytical reports. And they say, you know, hey, you did great on MSNBC. That's $1 million worth of, you know, stuff for your brand. The Fonnie Willis brand is doing well, or you know, this phrase is doing well, things like that.
She had an employee in her office that was responsible for promoting her image, her publicity.
She had a publicly funded contract for this. So Jeff DeSantis contracted or called this company, and it's in the emails. I think I provided those as well, but contacted Critical Mention and said, we need to hire you to do media monitoring. And it was the same week that she had sent the letter to Raffensperger and Kemp about this case. Said, we need to have a contract to do media monitoring. Got $10,000 approved, paid $10,000 for a year contract for an annual contract.
Who approved that?
Jeff DeSantis's email said the county approved it, and his emails indicated that it was hard to get approved, that he had to really push, I think is what he said. There's some language to that.
Taxpayer dollars being used for a PR stunt to keep track of how Fonnie Willis is being portrayed in the media. That part at the end there was something else. Now, let me explain to you my opinion on why I think this hearing was so much more important than people realize. She was subpoenaed, okay? So she had to appear. She was subpoenaed by this committee. She brought with her everything that she had found in doing this investigation to figure out what was going on with this contract with the DA. Bradley's the one who outed him. Bradley, the one who had selective amnesia on the stand, he's the one who outed them to his friend, attorney Ashley Merchant. She did some of the most dogged investigative work. If anybody ever needed an attorney, that's the attorney you want. Even though a lot of people were saying that, you know, she was weak in questioning. The point of this hearing right here was so that she was able to put that entire binder into a transcribed, sworn testimony. We got some breaking news, apparently. Let's see if we can find it. Hold on. Nothing there. Let's see. Let's check on the news wire here. Do I see anything yet? Let's see. Okay, Judge. Well, I need something. Breaking news. Judge Scott McAfee has granted in part and denied in part the motion to disqualify Fulton County DA Fonnie Willis. Bottom line, either she steps aside along with our entire office or Nathan Wade withdraws. A decision must be made. The court found there was no evidence of an actual conflict of interest. What? However, he did find that the prosecution is encumbered by an appearance of impropriety, and as long as Wade remains on the case, this unnecessary perception will persist. The court finds itself unable to place any stock in the testimony of Terrence Bradley. McAfee also said Robin Yerdy's testimony lacked context and detail, and he considered the Wade cell phone info, but said it didn't conclusively tell us when the relationship started. The court also denied the motions to dismiss the indictment. The court ruled there was no material financial benefit derived by Willis in hiring in and engaging in a personal relationship with Wade. And there we go. And there we go. I think I have a guest joining the show. Hold on. That's the decision. That is the decision from the Fonnie Willis judge.
Hello.
Hey.
What's up?
So we just got the Fonnie Willis decision.
What happened?
I just played a clip of Natalie Merchant in front of the Senate in Georgia, so it was perfect timing. He said he's not disqualified. She either has to step aside or fire Nathan Wade, and that's it, basically.
Man.
And that there's no evidence she benefited from the...
Pays to be a Democrat. It really does.
I think that this would have been different, Frank, if somebody didn't step up to challenge this judge in his race a day before the deadline, because he was running unopposed, and then all of a sudden in some lefty crazy comes to run against him. So
it's just crazy.
They'll appeal.
You think about just the comfort, the level of comfort a Democrat, especially in that line of work, must have. I mean, you just have this amazing bubble around you where coincidence and everything happens. Even if you can't escape all of the consequences, the blow is softened in such an amazingly timely way.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
I'm totally divested.
It's so bad.
Ugh.
Wow.
Wow. Well, thanks. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I know.
Here I am. I'm sorry I'm late. I was at the transphobic, racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic Anonymous, and the whole damn thing ran so late because there are so many more phobics that joined this week, and we're all trying to work through our issues. And I totally forgot. I thought that your interview with the Attorney General was going to be a little bit longer than that. So my apologies.
I know there's a lot of us phobes running around nowadays.
I have to work through it, but sometimes it just bubbles inside of me like a well of hatred.
Well, I have a couple things, Frank, for today. We're in 35 minutes. We have time for basically everything. Do you want to do some heavy stuff first and then move on to the lighter side of things? Or do you want to start with the lighter side and end basically everything?
Sure. Yeah, let's go heavy and start light.
So I don't know if many of you know, but... Dan Bongino yesterday, I started getting texts in like the middle of the day, like, oh, Tracy, Dan Bongino shouted you out for the clip you had up of Adam Morgan, the representative in South Carolina. So I went to his show to just check out what he was talking about. And I noticed immediately there was something very wrong. Like, he just wasn't himself. And it turns out, unfortunately, Dan Bongino's mom passed away the night before.
Oh.
Completely unexpectedly.
And he still went to work.
Still went to work. He thought it would be better for him. But I came across, this morning I was going back to try and find it because I wanted to just wish him some condolences and whatever. And I came across this portion of his show at 37 minutes that I'm just compelled to play for everybody, where he tells a story of something that happened to him the other night. Let me hold on, because I think I have to fix this. I have to share my audio again. Okay. Let's listen to this, guys. Let's listen to Dan. This is insane. It's going to throw everyone for a loop. Here we go.
So, my mom died last night. Unexpectedly. She fell down a flight of stairs.
Ugh.
And I found out early this morning. And the weirdest thing is, as my team can attest to, that this clip is not in the show because of that. I sent it yesterday. In this exact spot. Just give me a sec. So I found out at about 4:43 in the morning. Why would I give you an exact time? Because I got up to look at my phone. Because I wanted to call Paula because something really strange happened to me. Paula and I are never separate. Sometimes on the road we're separate, but I'm never home alone, ever. But because it's spring break week, Paula took my youngest daughter down to Miami. They were going to have like a girls thing. And I was working back here in the studio. So last night's the first time I was alone in my house in a long time. So my mother, for those of you who don't believe in God, I'm not here to judge you. Please don't take it the wrong way. I'm not your judge and jury. But I want to tell you something. I want to tell you in advance, I'm not crazy, okay? I'm not crazy. So I got up to call Paula because my mother was pronounced dead around 3 a.m. in the morning. Just be patient with me, please. And I was going to call Paula because I said I wanted to tell her that something really weird had happened. Then I looked at my phone and I saw I had a text. I turned it off, do not disturb. And I noticed I had a text at 2:49. It was from a woman who lives in this apartment building, this building that my mom lives in, and to tell me that she said, Dan, it's Teresa. I need you to call me. And it's 2:49 a.m. when she sent the text. But I was going to call Paula to tell her about this weird experience I'd had at 3 a.m. So at 3 a.m. in the morning, someone grabbed me, like hugged me, like a mom. Folks, I'm telling you, I'm not crazy. I had gotten up. I have as I always talk about, I'm not the greatest sleeper in the world. So I go to sleep early, like 8 o'clock. So I typically wake up around 3. And it's hard for me to go back to sleep. Usually takes about an hour. So it's 3 o'clock and I got up and I was really dehydrated. So I went to the kitchen. Again, I'm by myself. It's just the dog there. And I went to go get some water. So I'm up. I'm not in some dream state. I don't sleepwalk. And I propped a pillow, two pillows up behind my head. And I was just breathing to try to relax and go back to sleep. And I turned over this way and someone grabbed me. It was real. I'm telling you, it was real. I actually jumped up. I know it sounds crazy, but I was looking for my gun. And I started looking around the house and I thought, you know, Guy has a key to my house. I thought the weirdest thing, I thought like, did Guy have some fiber device to sneak in my house? I'm like, the hell would he grab me for? The weird things you start thinking about. And I thought, did Paula come home early and not tell me? Is she playing a game with me? Because she never wakes me up at night. And then I thought, did my other daughter come home from college? Did she not tell me? Someone grabbed me last night, right as my mom was pronounced dead. Folks, I'm telling you, if you don't believe in God and the afterlife, I would after last night. I was not imagining that. I was not in some fugue state. I was not dreaming. I felt someone grab me, actually grab me. I looked around my entire house. You know me, you know I'm not antsy. And her name was Judy. And We had a troubled relationship.
I can keep playing it if you want, but I just wanted to share that story.
Well, it's one of those things that you can't deny when it happens to you.
No.
I haven't had physical contact, but there's always weird, very strange, inexplicable kind of synchronicity around death and all that. Lights going out. That happened with my grandmother right before the call came from my mom and my grandfather at the hospital. She had died. Light just blew out in our bedroom, and then the phone rang. Things like that. Now there's so much more. There's so much more to what we're dealing with right now, where we are. And I think I think so far beyond our understanding. I think that we're given maps and clues and guidelines, and then there is just infinitely so much more. That's why I have a hard time drawing conclusions about anything. And I don't think that our existence just really comes down to just God, the devil, angels, and demons. I think there's just so much more, you know, as far as the mechanics of it all.
Yeah.
That's rough. That is so rough. I give him credit for even going to work, but I understand why he does.
That's what he said. He said, you know, on early, he's like, I just thought this would be best for me to come in. And, you know, I did a post like several weeks back where I asked people a whole bunch of different questions about like the afterlife and what they thought about it and what they thought about mediums and what they thought about psychics and what they thought about all of this. And, you know, energy cannot be created or destroyed, right? So I just feel like we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And I have zero doubt in my mind that there is more to this than just like living here on Earth and then it ends. And clearly Dan now firmly believes that as well. And I always say this to people that lose folks, and after I say it, I stop, because I've been blessed in my life never to lose a parent or like somebody that wasn't already very old and you know, having problems and things like that. But I believe it about them too. You are closer to your loved one after they pass than you ever were when they were alive. And there's an absence of judgment or love or hate or anger or any of that when somebody passes away and goes to God, that they just love you. Like, I mean, they're just pure love at that point. So Dan is with his mom now, despite their rocky relationship they had in human form, more so than he ever was before. And it's just sad. I feel terrible for Dan. That's painful. So grief is hard.
It's messy. It's a messy thing.
Yeah, grief is hard. I have choices for you. Just send a prayer to Dan. Give him a hug. Okay. Everybody send a prayer to Dan and give him a big hug, because that's not only is it hard to learn that your mom passed away, but it's also very shocking and life-changing to feel your mom before she passes away and she's not even there. That's an experience. That's an experience that will change him probably as a person. Probably will change him. Frank, do you want to do, I have a clip of an HOA meeting that just sent me rolling on the floor in laughter this morning.
What's HOA?
It's a group. So when you live in a community, it's common like down here. It's not common in New York at all. There's a board made up of somebody who's elected by the residents in the neighborhood. And there's bylaws like you can't keep your grass like this. You have to have your house painted like this. You can't put a pool in your backyard.
It's a homeowners association?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So there's this meeting that Sarah Fields shared on Twitter that just had me on the floor laughing this morning. It's an HOA meeting where the residents are really not happy with what the HOA is doing and the way this meeting is being run. Or I have an assignment that my daughter was given in English class. It says, let's argue. And there are 22 different topics that they are instructed to, quote, argue in class. And then I asked the general public to add their suggestions for topics that are non-controversial. So I have a whole thread of different things that people want to see debated.
Let's start with that. Let's see if we can reduce these arguments down to simple conclusions.
All right. So I'm going to randomly pick one on the actual. We're not even going to do the actual assignment because the audience ones were so much better. Is a hot dog considered a sandwich?
Yes. But sandwich has many subcategories. So there's that.
Like what?
If you've got meat between buns, meat between bread, you're in sandwich territory. I mean, there's like hoagies. There's so many different types of things. Like a Philly cheesesteak. Is that a sandwich?
Yes.
Why isn't a hot dog a sandwich?
Actually, I consider a sandwich, because a hot dog is in the meat category.
You can consider a hot dog a hot open, hot open sandwich, like when you take some bread and you get the roast beef and the open roast beef sandwiches with the gravy on top, still a sandwich.
Why don't we just call it a sandwich then? Why do we call it a hot dog?
I don't know. Things just become known as certain things colloquially, and they almost feel like they're their own thing, but they're not. You just got to divorce yourself from the, no, man, that's a hot dog. A hamburger. What's a hamburger?
A hamburger isn't a sandwich.
Of course it is.
A hamburger is a hamburger. Otherwise, you'd call it a meat sandwich. You wouldn't call it a call hamburger.
It a that's fine by me. Call it a meat sandwich then.
A meat sandwich.
I think that some things are really just a matter of what we are, culturally conditioned to see differently, even though they fit all the descriptions of something else.
I've got others. Let's see.
Okay. By the way, I don't refer to hot dogs as sandwiches, though. But for the sake of debate, we're just being scientific about this.
Here's one from Mike Boring. Why does sour cream have an expiration date?
Great. So that's a great question. But there's definitely an answer. And I don't have it.
Can it go bad?
Yeah.
I think that mold can grow in sour cream.
Exactly. And you don't want it to get to that point. But I don't know what it is, especially as far as fermentation goes. I think it just might be one of those things where it's a fermented food and you get to a certain point and it's just, wine eventually just turns to vinegar, So I think it's just probably one of those things where you have to hit a sweet spot of the fermentation process. Mm-hmm.
This one, you would better answer this one correctly, or we're going to have some serious issues. Pineapple on pizza, delicious topping or culinary mistake?
I guess it depends on where you grow up. I know some people, the Hawaiian pizzas are like, they can't get anything better than that with the ham and the pineapple. I don't want sweet stuff. I don't even like barbecue sauce on pizza, but... I can see how it would work, but I don't get into the debate about whether or not it's a sacrilege. If that's all you, then whatever. But I can see how the tastes would work. I've never preferred it.
No, though. No, the tastes don't work at all. They don't work at all. Let's see. What else do I got here? Is it forgivable to forget a spouse's birthday by accident?
I don't know. How do you do it? Well, I mean, you can be under so much stress that you just forget what day it is.
What if you're self-employed and your job is to make curtains for people?
My whole thing is, it's one thing to wake up and get mixed up on what day it is. That's almost like saying, I like you, you didn't you forgot Christmas was tomorrow. Like, how do you not see the birthday coming?
What if a week goes by before you realize you did it?
That's bad. That's bad. Because if a week goes by before you realize you did it, that means that she or he chose not to say anything. And you've been unknowingly stewing in your own demise for a week and you didn't know. You have been cooking in your sin for a week and you did not know. Mm-hmm. They're letting you cook.
Yeah, for sure.
Every day that has added on to that tally is just, they're always going to go to that a week. It didn't cross your mind for a week. 9 days, 12 days. You didn't wish me a happy birthday. Oh, 12 yeah. days. You're screwed. You're stewing in your sin.
You are. And they're keeping tally for sure.
Yeah.
Rinse your dishes before you put them in the dishwasher or not?
Lightly.
I saw a video that you should actually not do that. That the dishwasher works better when you keep the debris on the plates.
Well, I'm thinking like just crumbs, things that are loose. I would give it one if I would take the hose attachment, I would just give it a once over, and whatever was already loose will just come off. I wouldn't like wipe down a splotch of ketchup or anything like that. I would leave that to the machine.
At that point, what's the point of that's what my husband is like. He basically washes the dishes, puts them in the dishwasher. Then I'm like, why are you doing that? Like, right. What's the point of a dishwasher? Do you put your silverware in face up or face down? Or like, you know, pointy sides up or pointy sides down?
Pointy sides up.
Me too.
That's what Lauren said. I never had a preference until Lauren told me that that's what you do, because then it drains down instead of have everything drained down to the tips of the fork. It's draining down to the handle, and you just take them out and then you wipe them down or whatever.
Let's see. There's a lot of people that want to know, dogs versus cats, what's the better pet?
I prefer dogs.
Me too.
I prefer dogs, but there's so many trade-offs. The autonomy of cats cannot be beaten. You know, you with a dog, you have a child for as long as they're alive. And then that's the other thing. They live so short compared to a cat.
Yeah.
That you know before you blink, they're going to be old timers, and you're going to be preparing for their death. And I know that the friendship and the companionship means so much more than the heartbreak of saying goodbye, but there's so many different trade-offs there where cats are better because they live longer and they take care of themselves. But there's nothing like the companionship of a dog.
One last one, and then I'm doing the HOA clip before we end today, because it's funny. Turning signal if no one is around.
Oh, no.
No? No signal.
Oh, no. If no one's around, lights don't mean shit to me.
Well, New York has nothing but red light cameras now, so.
Yeah, and I'm only talking about residential, residential areas that I am very familiar with. There's a couple of spots in my town where if I'm going home and it's past midnight, I am totally comfortable with giving everything a look-see and just leaving. No, there's no red light that held me down.
Another thing, too, I just want to add, because there's a very, boisterous chat going on here. I don't put my knives in the dishwasher either. They're hand washed to keep them nice. Never, ever wash your steak knives in the dishwasher. It's just not good for them.
Wait. Were you talking about pointy sides up in a washer?
In the dishwasher.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant pointy sides up or down when they're in the rack drying.
Oh, no.
Okay, we don't have a dishwasher, so all I know is
you do have a dishwasher. Her name is Lauren.
Yeah, well, actually, she loves it. She loves it, which is one of those good things that she goes into a zone when she washes the dishes. And I think we have a pretty good,
system.
Pretty good balance of what everybody does during the week.
Will loves the dishes. He does the dishes. I don't even bother anymore because he just does it over again once I'm finished. So I just let him do it. All right, we're playing the HOA clip. You're staying with me an extra minute.
Okay.
This is an HOA meeting gone horribly wrong. It's hysterical. It's really funny. Off we go. Here we go. I'll tell you the part that really sent me over the edge here.
Technology, because it's crazy.
You're very confident.
Really, right? Oh my God. Who starts a meeting with such hostility?
Elderly grandmother who served in the war.
What? Oh, how is she elected?
Who's that? Who is that?
First of all, we will not refer to people as that. That is not who we are.
We need introducing.
Hello, everyone. My name is French. How are you this evening?
Not well, folks.
I am an interim board member.
Wait, there's a board member who wasn't voted in at all?
No, he wasn't voted in at all. He's appointed.
We will now take our vote.
What?
Vote on what?
You gave us no information. We have no information. What are you freaking voting on?
I am here. You've got a little thing saying blah, blah, blah. What you're saying is misleading. What information are you doing here? We have no information on the company here. You're willing to hire. We have no information to compare apples to apples. No, you're voting on what? Yeah. Is everybody all crazy here?
Absolutely.
Just wait.
So with that being said, thank you very much.
What do you mean? What do you mean that being said? You didn't say anything.
Companies.
What's
your commission, one of those companies?
Wait, is everybody being pranked?
No, this person keeps saying, with that being said, and the guy's like, what do you mean? You said nothing.
What's...
Hold on, it gets better. Wait.
What are you wrapping up? You didn't do anything.
Oh, they got a mic. Can you hear me now?
No.
Am I here now?
No. Is that a child's karaoke machine?
They bring out a kid's karaoke machine to use as a microphone.
I'm fascinated. I really am fascinated by this.
It gets better here. Oh man, I accidentally, hold on. Here we go.
No.
Am I here now?
No.
Is that a child's karaoke machine?
You are moving to vote to make the choice if we want a proper, if we want a property management company.
They won't. They won't.
Hey, do we need it?
No. They appointed the person who's going to vote they want for their third vote.
It would be the vote that we voted to get a management company named PRC Group here in the community.
So, first of all, how do they know the name of the company already if the vote just happened?
So they want to get a property management company to come in and start. So as far as the...
I don't know any details about this. Other than there's a bunch of residents who clearly don't want a property management company. This board with one appointed interim member votes to do the property management company supposedly right then, but already has the property management company's name ready to go.
But all of the residents in this kind of a situation, I remember Lauren was, you know, she was a part of this in one place that she used to live back in the day. But do residents have a vote?
Yes, typically they're supposed to. I mean, that's what this whole meeting is supposed to be about.
So they have no support from anybody.
No.
So.
Just wait.
You made the decision for all these people.
Yep. That's okay. She'll get voted out. It's okay.
No management company. The people you were elected to represent are telling you they don't want something.
With that being said,
this is important. Posting's going out for this lake. This lake is going to have a important major project done to it.
Major project done to it. This, wait a second. What is the major? Now all of a sudden there's a major project? No, this is.
This is so.
There has to be more. There has
this
to be more.
This woman who is standing up there, the president that was elected apparently, has to live in this community.
No, no, no. There has to be more to that. That can't be all. Oh, man. I hope this turns into a mini series. That's just, you know, you think about the fragility of civilization, and you think about how, you know, the shoe could drop at any moment where that's it. The government's insolvent. There's nothing they can do anymore. There's regional instability, whatever. Everybody is forced to really just hunker down locally and rebuild their lives and get really practical with things. This is what the smallest of governments would turn into in many places.
It's so funny, Frank, because they're like asking about the guy who's sitting there with the mask on, not saying it, Frank. And they're asking, who is that? And she goes, we will not refer to people as that.
Who is that? At that point is when I said, is the board over here, is this some kind of a candid camera that they're really screwing with people?
These people, they're all outside. People wearing masks outside. It must have been during COVID that they had the meeting outside. It's like, by the time the end of this video happens, it's twilight. People are like...
Oh, so this is an old... You think that this is old?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's
old. It's just getting passed around right now, huh?
Yeah, Sarah Fields tweeted it. She said, I have so many questions. That's it. I had to end with that.
There must be more footage of that somewhere.
I'll try and find it. I will just tell you this. As somebody who has an HOA in their community, it's like... Did you ever go on Nextdoor, the app Nextdoor?
Me personally, no. But I have family who are on Nextdoor who had to leave.
Yeah, you can't stay on Nextdoor. If you're any bit of a decent human being, you cannot stay on Nextdoor. It is a toxic waste dump of ninnies just complaining about the stupidest stuff. Like, so-and-so had their porch light on after blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, it's terrible.
Yeah, okay? Bunch of yentas.
Yeah, that's all they have. HOA is like next door on steroids. They don't let you do anything you want to do. It's a terrible way to live. I wish I would have known how bad it actually was coming down here from New York to be in an HOA community. It's, you can't keep your basketball hoop more than 6 inches from the curb. You need to have a, if you want to have a shed in your backyard, Frank, it needs to be with the same shingles as your roof. It's insanity.
Wow. That is insane. I'm looking all over the place now. I put HOA meeting fail. I just need to know that there's at least
Go to this TikTok. It's volume up vids.
Volume up vids.
If you go to that TikTok account, you might be able to find more.
All right. I'm on volume up vids. Let's see. HOA. Okay. There is 7.8 million for the HOA.
Look in the comments.
Let me see if there's a part two. HOA is a joke in the first place. Chaotic HOA videos are fire. Please record every HOA meeting. Thank you. I'm legit crying over everyone pulling up their lawn chairs for the HOA meeting. Come on. Somebody has to ask about whether or not there's a part two.
The people need to know what the hell happened at that one.
There's nothing here. Homeowners, neighbors, Karens, viral. There's nothing here. Mm. Dang.
They can lien your property too, just so you know. They can.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. Like, we're going through it here right now. So this was very ripe. For lack of a better word. Anyway, thanks, Frank.
Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy we got this done. I'm so sorry for the misunderstanding.
I told Frank we have an interview to air that's 20 minutes long on Friday, and he took that to mean don't show up. I don't understand it myself, but hey, I mean,
I thought that meant that we got an interview that you're airing on Friday that you recorded at another time and okay, so I that's what I thought.
But you're here, yep. So it doesn't even matter. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Vale on the drums and
Beans. Remember to send some well wishes over to Dan. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on the streaming platforms. Remember, Monday, I think the Supreme Court hearing is at 9? I'm not sure. Whatever the case may be, I will be streaming that entire thing. So if it's after the show, I'll just start a new stream. If it's during the show, I'll keep the show stream going. Everybody have a nice weekend. Love your loved ones. And we will see you back here on Monday.
Later.